Shout out to Claritev for supporting this episode and providing us with the samples. I've been battling allergies for years now. Let me tell you, they've been a real ordeal in my life. Luckily for those of us who live with the symptoms of allergies, we can live Claritin Clear with Claritin D. This double action combination of prescription strength allergy medicine and the best decongestant available relieves sneezing, a runny nose, itchy and watery eyes, an itchy nose and throat, and sinus congestion and pressure with ease. Fast and powerful relief is just a quick trip away. Find Claritin D at the pharmacy counter. Ask for Claritin D at your local pharmacy counter. You don't even need a prescription. Go to ClaritinD.com right now for a discount so you can live Claritin Clear. Use as directed.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I hate losing more than I like winning. You know, you have to understand what fuels people. And you know, some people it's money. Some people it's success. Some people it's, you know, notoriety. You know, you have to kind of understand everybody. And I didn't need the coach to give me a pat on the back. I didn't need, you know, as my career went along, I didn't need him to yell at me either. It was more like, I know when I made a mistake. I'm my own worst critic.
Right.
I hate making mistakes. And I'm going to ride myself into the ground. I'm treating myself worse than I know you will.
Yeah.
And as I drive myself, it's all right. Recover from that. Figure out what happened. Don't make the same mistake and continue on. And, you know, I think people have to figure out in their lives what avenue drives them the best and use it to the best of their abilities. And a lot of times people are unable to figure that out.
What's up, gang? Welcome to The Greatness Machine. I'm your host, Darius Mrshazadeh. I'm so pumped to have you here with me. Now listen, The Greatness Machine, we're about two things. Number one, people who are living their passions. And number two, those who are creating greatness in the world and doing both of these things despite the odds against them. Each episode, we're going to feature interviews with game changers, and business leaders, you know, telling us their origin stories, what made them tick, what got them to where they are now. Why? So it can help you step into your greatness within your life, your business, and your career. Occasionally, you might hear a few solo episodes from myself, moi as I say, as I leverage my 20 years of entrepreneurship as a CEO and founder to help you grow and level up in your journey to scale your life and your business. So come be a fly on the wall, enjoy the conversation, and I'm stoked to have you here with me. Guys, welcome to The Greatness Machine. I'm your host, Darius Mrshazadeh, and my gosh, do we have a guest. My main man, NHL Hall of Famer, my brother from another mother, Chris Pronger's in the house.
Darius, how are you?
Oh, man. You know, one of the reasons I like to sing before the show is I get a massive endorphin rush.
Yes.
Knowing that I'm getting after it with a good friend of mine. So, man.
A little blood flow. I love it.
Brother, I'm so glad to have you here. Thank you for coming to the show.
Thanks for having me.
So, guys, for those of you guys that are new to The Greatness Machine, we're about two things. People who are living their passions and those who have created greatness in the world. And my man, Chris Pronger, has done a lot of both of those. So I'm so excited to chop it up with you and to really talk about, like, how did you create all this greatness? How did you do all the things you did? But do you mind if I start by a little bit of our origin story?
Let's do it.
All right. So Chris and I, we're in an investment group together called Tiger 21. And it was my first day at Tiger in Austin, Texas, here in Austin, Texas. He's now in St. Louis, but he's moving to Austin. So we're in the same Tiger group. And I go in the room and I don't know a couple people in the room, but I don't know everybody. And I see this guy that's really tall. How tall are you? Like 6'6"? Yeah, 6'6". I'm 6-ish. I'm barely over 6 foot. But 6'6", yeah, that's a tall dude. And I'm like, that's a big dude. And I don't know shit about hockey. So like, I didn't think, it's like other people would have like seen Chris and knew exactly who it was right away. I had no idea. And so I don't know how it comes up. Someone mentions the word hockey and this is early in the meeting. And I look on his like name tag and I'm like, what's his name? And I Google and I was like, oh shit, this guy's a badass hockey player. Like, I didn't know that you were like this stuff. I had no idea who you were. I didn't know that you were this like Hall of Fame badass hockey player. And I was like, shit, man. And then that evening, after we got done with the meeting, we sat around and we bullshitted and had drinks. And putting hockey aside, I was like, I like this guy, man. He's cool. He's a cool guy.
Just so, having a beer or two, telling stories.
Oh, man. You're a good storyteller. You're funny. You're a funny dude. So it was like at first sight. I was like, I like this guy.
Feeling is mutual.
Oh, gosh. I appreciate that. So do you mind if I give your more formal bio for?
Sure.
I gave you guys my like, hey, that's a tall
dude. I'll help you out if you need any.
You know, it's funny is, again, since I don't know anything about hockey yet. Now, one of the things in Tiger 21, one of the cool things we do is these things called portfolio defenses, where you come and tell your life story, more or less. And yours was amazing, number one. And the cool thing when someone is a professional athlete or they have been in the public eye is a lot of the things you did in life are documented for you to show people. So we see all this cool stuff during the PD. Now the next day, you don't know this either. I go home and I go to YouTube and now we're going to get into this, that Chris was a badass defensive man, awesome an NHL player, but he was like, you're like a bruiser, man. Like, you fuck people up on the ice. And so I'm like, no, I'm a very inquisitive person. I'm like, I go to YouTube, I type in Chris Pronger kicking people's asses. Like, Chris Pronger biggest hits. And I sat there at night and watched you crush people for like 20 minutes. And I was like, oh man, this is like, I haven't even told you that. This happened like right after you did.
You have to send me that highlight reel so I can show it to my daughter's friends that come over when she gets a little bit older.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, future friends and boyfriends of Pronger's daughter, watch out.
Be very careful.
Yeah, be very careful. This man's dangerous. And so anyway, you guys, Chris, let me pull the bio up. I'm going to read it just so I because it's such a cool bio. Chris is a Hockey Hall of Famer, NHL Hockey Hall of Famer, top 100 of all time in the NHL, Stanley Cup champion, NHL MVP, two-time Olympic gold medalist. You are the second Olympian on the show, first gold medalist, four-time Olympian, who is now building his travel company, Well Inspired Travels. We'll be talking about that in a second. But a few more things here. Started your career with the Whalers in 93, 9 seasons with the Blues, Edmonton Oilers, Ducks, Flyers, 1,167 games played, 173 playoff games, 6-time All-Star. Did I get all those right?
I believe so.
Oh, man. Thank you, Wikipedia.
Usually they're pretty accurate.
Yeah, sometimes they people
double checking things, making sure people aren't putting in some lame-o stuff.
Yeah, I mean, dude, that's like the most impactful like 200 words I've ever said about somebody. I mean you are a freaking beast, and now you're in your next phase of life. You and your wife have an amazing boutique luxury travel company called Well Inspired Travels, and you're catering to elite athletes, entertainers, C-level executives, and business owners. And you got an amazing family and children, and we're gonna be talking all about that.
Awesome. Stuff. Thank you.
Oh, man. Woo!
Woo! You must be tired.
No, I'm ready to go, baby. Thunderstruck right now. So, man, that is, I mean, look, you've lived probably multiple lives in one life, but I mean, I just want maybe a few. Yeah, a couple.
Good and bad.
Yeah, you guys haven't even seen all his like injuries. Like how many major injuries have you had in your life?
Well, I've had 16 surgeries. I recently had a knee replacement, which is going fairly good and hopefully will be the last. Major injuries, I don't know, breaks and other stuff. I don't know, maybe 25 if you add in the surgeries and the breaks and everything.
Man, that's gnarly. So I want to take a step back, like young Chris Pronger, you know, how did it all get? Take us from the beginning, man.
Yeah. Small town, Canada. Hometown is Dryden, Ontario, which is in northwestern Ontario in between Winnipeg and Thunder Bay. I am 8 hours straight north of Minneapolis, Minnesota. So think how cold Minneapolis is and go 8 hours north of that.
Wow.
And it's cold.
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
Are you a warm guy or are you a cold guy?
I am a warm guy now.
Once you knew better.
I know, based on all these injuries and everything, I know when the temperature is changing. Well, that's not a good thing.
I think it's about to rain. No, it's not.
Oh, absolutely.
15 minutes, trust me.
The aches and pains come out real quick when there's barometric pressure moving. Let's see here. Small town, Canada. Obviously grew up. My mom was a teacher. Dad was an accountant. One brother, 2 years older. So I was always trying to keep up with the Joneses and keep up with them.
Yeah.
And we played hockey, whether it was, you know, outside shooting pucks against the garage, skating at the outdoor rink, playing road hockey. My brother and I in our basement, you know, we used to flip a ball into the corner and see who could come out with it. Yeah. Those were some of the nastier games. And then obviously the more organized formal hockey at Dryden Arena. And that's kind of what we live for. And obviously when you have a 7-month winter,
yeah,
a lot of time to play hockey. So, you know, it was a passion of ours. And you know, like any small, you know, small town kid or any kid in Canada growing up that passionate about sports and passionate about hockey, your goal is to play in the NHL. And, you know, obviously that's a pretty far off goal, but, you know, I was no different than any other kid, you know, creating these scenarios where you're in game 7 of the Stanley Cup finals, or you got 4 seconds left and you got to shoot and score, you know, you make up all these things in your head. And you know, I lived back home till I was 15 and then moved away from home to go play junior hockey in Stratford for a year.
Mm-hmm.
And then was drafted into the Ontario Hockey League by the Peterborough Petes and played 2 years there before being drafted and starting my career with the Hartford Whalers.
So
an 18-year-old.
Well, let me ask you a question. Like, at what age did you start? I mean, obviously, you don't just go from like screwing around with your brothers to straight to the NHL, right? I mean, at what point did you start to realize, man, I'm better than most people. Like, this
yeah,
is like,
you know,
like,
yeah, I'm from a small town in, you know, kind of no man's land. So a lot of the higher end competition is down in the Toronto area, Montreal, Vancouver, you know, the bigger cities and in Canada. So for us, you know, you're playing in your own little area and you're, you know, you're pretty good and you didn't really have anything to compare it to.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I played in a number of Ontario Pee Wee championships and things like that to kind of get a gauge as to, you know, what the other kids in our province were like. I really didn't think much of it until I got to Peterborough and started playing against kids that were drafted in the first round that were big name prospects that were legitimate NHL players and things of that nature. So once I started comparing myself against them, I was like, oh, I'm not that far off. Like, I'm as good as this guy and he's a first round pick and I'm as good as, you know, you kind of see how they play the game and you see the level of competition and I was kind of getting better and better and better and obviously growing and was going up, but not necessarily out.
Right.
I was a tall, skinny kid. So, but I always played the same way from the time I was really young till I was done playing. I hard nosed, leave it all on the ice. You know, offensively, defensively, you know, play a finesse game, play a physical game, whatever the game dictated at that moment. Or if you wanted to kind of change the way the game was being played, you could kind of impose your will on it that way. So for me, you know, people are always like, well, why do you play like that? How do you, you know, it's just, it's the only way I know how to play the game. 100% physical, aggressive. If I did not play that way, I tried it for a couple games when, you know, a couple, I don't know if it was ownership or management said, you know, maybe tone it down a notch. And I was not very good, frankly. I need to play with that intensity and that passion. And, you know, I need to be in people's faces. I need to keep people leery and kind of on edge to really kind of create holes and open up spaces and things for my teammates.
So going back to when you're younger, was there anyone like, I mean, obviously you, to play at that level with that, you know, and to go into the, I guess that's the minor leagues. Is that essentially when you first realized?
Like, in junior? It's below that. I mean, it's, you know, it's quasi, but it's still, you're not drafted yet. You're not, you know, there are drafted players playing there.
Got it. Okay.
And therefore in the NCAA's eyes, it's professional because there are drafted players and players that can be under contract. So in their eyes, it's considered professional, but it's not.
Yeah,
you know, so 16-year-olds to 20-year-olds.
So you're in the juniors. You're like going up against these dudes that are like top drafts, and you're like, I can hold my own with them.
My rookie year, I had to play against Eric Lindros after he just went first overall and held out and didn't play. And so part of the year he played in the OHL for Oshawa, and part of the year he played on the Canadian Olympic team.
So in your family, were you the most athletic, or was it just that you had an athletic family, or is anyone in your family very like overly athletic, or was it just something that was just this thing? Like, I'm pretty good at this and no big deal.
No, my brother played. My brother played in the NHL for 200 and some games.
Okay.
My dad played, university hockey. But as far as that concerned, there was no bloodlines in my family that played hockey or sports or anything of that nature. And even from our hometown, coming from a small town like that, very few players had come out of there. One had, a small stint in the NHL. So it was kind of new territory for the area, for especially our hometown. So, I was kind of really the one that was, my brother and I were kind of the ones that were kind of plowing and forging ahead and creating a new path for a lot of kids. And I think people need to realize, and probably do, there was no internet at that time.
Right.
So researching players and knowing what's going on in the world and knowing what's going on in the Ontario Hockey League and the NCAA and things like that, you really were reading one small little book, the Hockey Digest, to get a little bit of information.
Right.
Not a lot. So my brother took the path. He played in the NCAA and played at Bowling Green State University, mm-hmm. in Ohio. And I had originally thought, well, I'll go that route. And then as I kept playing, I started getting better and better and better. And, I just needed that next step up to continue my development. And when I chose to go to Peterborough, I would have had to have gone back to Stratford to finish high school before I went to the NCAA. And for my development and maturation process, it just would not have worked going back to play junior B against lesser competition. My play probably would have stagnated, and it would have, you never know how things would have turned out, but looking back on it and seeing how my play developed being in Peterborough, I look at a lot of players that were in that similar circumstance. Their play really declined and they didn't continue to develop on the level that they should have had they continued to move on and advance into more difficult competition.
So when you eventually got drafted, and do you mind telling us what that felt like? Like when you, what number one, you were first round draft, but what was your draft number?
I was second overall.
So you were number two draft in your class, your draft class, which
And I'll tell you, by the way, there was a famous quote by the kid who went first overall. Nobody remembers number two.
Oh, who was number one?
Oh, you don't remember him, do you?
No.
It's funny, little things like that. And I'm sure we'll get into it, but little things like that always sat right here, and they just little birdie in your ear, giving you that fuel to push yourself and push through difficult circumstances, situations, what have you. And we use all kinds of things to fuel us, but that always sat there. And of course the media loved to play it up and always bring up that quote. But Alexander Dagg was the kid who had that beautiful quote.
Yeah.
And it wasn't too long after that that quote was no longer relevant.
Yeah. So did you get to play with him on the ice, like very much in the pros?
Not very often. Early on in his career, yeah, because he was still being given that opportunity, and it was probably 3 or 4 years and then it was over.
He bounced around. Why would someone say something like that? Like what is the point?
He was young, didn't have great English at the time. And you know what?
Yeah.
You could call him cocky, you could call him whatever, but I think he thought he was good and nobody was going to be better. And anybody, the issue, everybody's been telling him that for years. Oh, you're the best. And giving him one of these. And what else are you going to say?
I have a phrase that I like to say about people like that. You want to know what it is?
Speaketh.
Yeah, it's fuck that guy.
Yeah. Well, you got his.
Yeah. So yeah,
more nights than one.
Too bad for him. So that probably, obviously people say shit like that, it kind of eats at you a little bit. And you're like, all right, I'll use that as a motivator. But you get into the league and you start playing and obviously things start picking up. But yeah, like when you finally realized your dream, and the reason I ask it is I think a lot of times in business and in life and in athletics and all these different competitive arenas, we have these destinations in mind, right? That fuel us to like fight to get to a point. And then we get there. And at least from my seat, did you get this moment where it's like, oh my God, I can't believe I hit this. And then it kind of fades pretty quickly. I don't know. Did you have that same experience?
Well, that's the difference between where people get to and how they develop and how they push themselves. It's not good enough just to be drafted. It's a goal, but once you're there, okay, what's next? Right. What's the next goal? You know, where do you raise the bar to? And it's, all right, I want to make the team. Okay, then it's, what's next? All right, I want to be a regular, and then I want to be top four, and then I want to be the guy. And then you have to keep setting the bar higher.
When you're hiring for a small business, you want to find quality professionals that are right for the role. That's why you have to check out LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn Jobs has the tools to help find the right professionals for your team faster and for free. When I needed to expand my team, I wanted more than just resumes. I wanted quality professionals who were the perfect fit for our culture and goals. And LinkedIn Jobs delivered just that. LinkedIn Jobs isn't just another job board. LinkedIn Jobs has a vast network of more than a billion professionals, which makes it the best place to hire. It gives you access to professionals you can't find anywhere else. LinkedIn does all that while making the process easy and intuitive. Hiring is easy when you have that many quality candidates. So easy, in fact, that 86% of small businesses get qualified candidate within 24 hours. They understand the challenges small businesses face, which is why they're constantly innovating to make the hiring process easier. And just recently, LinkedIn launched a feature that helps you write job descriptions in a snap. Trust me, I've used it. It's like having a personal assistant to guide you through the process, making it quicker and more efficient than ever before. And let me tell you, it made all the difference. With LinkedIn's help, I've been able to attract top talent and build a team that's truly exceptional. Post your job for free at linkedin.com/greatness. That's linkedin.com/greatness to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply. This episode is brought to you by Shopify. In the world of successful partnerships, names like Procter & Gamble, Ben & Jerry, and supply and demand echo through business history. But when it comes to growing your business, who are the perfect partners? That's you and Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. We're talking from launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to did we hit $1 million order stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling shipping supplies or promoting productivity programs, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Picture this, a time when my business was facing a tough hurdle and I wasn't sure how to break through. But then came the breakthrough moment, a game changer that took my business to the next level. You know, what I absolutely adore about Shopify is its unparalleled ability to adapt and grow with your ambitions. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the US, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 75 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way, because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/Darius, all lowercase. That's D-A-R-I-U-S. Go to shopify.com/Darius now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/Darius. Shout out to Claritin for supporting this episode and providing us with the samples. Hey there, friends. It's Darius from Shazda here, and I have a little confession to make. You see, I've been battling allergies for years now, and let me tell you, they've been a real ordeal in my life. Allergies have been my constant companion. They stop me from fully enjoying the little things in life, canceling plans with friends because of sudden allergy attack, to missing out on an outdoor activity because of sneezing fits. Allergies have been a real nuisance. Luckily, for those of us who live with symptoms of allergies, we can live Claritin Clear with Claritin D. This double action combination of prescription strength allergy medicine and the best decongestant available relieves sneezing and a runny nose, itchy, watery eyes, an itchy nose and throat, and sinus congestion and pressure with ease. I've been a Claritin D user for many, many years now, and let me tell you, it's made a world of difference. Since I started using Claritin D, my symptoms have improved dramatically. Now I can breathe easier, enjoy outdoor activities without worrying about sneezing fits, and truly live my life without being held back by allergies. Ready to live as if you don't have allergies? It's time to live Claritin Clear. Fast and powerful relief is just a quick trip away. Find Claritin D at the pharmacy counter. Ask for Claritin D at your local pharmacy counter now. You don't even need a prescription. Go to ClaritinD.com right now for a discount so you can live Claritin Clear, use as directed.
And what happens is people that are not as successful as they should be, or you see they have the talent, but maybe they don't have the work ethic or the brain power, whatever it is, they stop working and they get comfortable and satisfied. Well, I got here. Well, that's not good enough. You know, and I used to always tell players, I'm like, it's not good enough just to be here. You're not getting paid just to be here. You're getting paid to win games. And if you win games, your stats are going to be there, and therefore you're going to get paid. And guess what people want? They want winners, and therefore they will pay you more because you're a winner.
Yeah.
And you try to explain that to people, and I hate losing more than I like winning.
It's yeah. just,
you know, you have to understand what fuels people. And you know, some people it's money, some people it's success, some people it's, you know, notoriety. You know, you have to kind of understand everybody and kind of, I didn't need the coach to give me a pat on the back. I didn't need, you know, as my career went along, I didn't need him to yell at me either. It was more like, I know when I made a mistake. I'm my own worst critic.
Right.
I hate making mistakes.
Right.
And I'm going to ride myself into the ground. I'm treating myself worse than I know you will.
Yeah.
And as I drive myself, it's all right. Recover from that. Figure out what happened. Don't make the same mistake and continue on. And, you know, I think people have to figure out in their lives what avenue drives them the best, mm-hmm. which outlet, and use it to the best of their abilities. And a lot of times people are unable to figure that out.
Going back to yourself, you made the league and then, you know, obviously the bar kept getting raised. What, like for yourself, like when you started approaching that, obviously there was a massive competitive spirit. There's no question about that. But like, what do you think? I mean, I got to assume there's tons of guys in the league with a massive competitive spirit that don't have the stats you have, that don't have the accolades you have. What do you think, if you were looking back retrospectively now and saying, okay, I did something that almost nobody's done. I mean, how many people have played in NHL in the time frame that you played? Thousands, I'm guessing.
A couple thousand, yeah.
Yeah. And, yeah. And how many?
Probably, yeah.
Yeah, you're top 100 of all time in the NHL. Yeah,
well, I guess there's probably been, over that time period, 10,000.
So like the best of the best is really what it comes down to. What do you think, what was it outside a natural ability? Obviously some natural skill was to play in there, but if you put that aside, because there's plenty of people with great natural skill that don't do what you did, what was it that made you be able to create that greatness for yourself?
Well, I think part of it was I was a hockey junkie early on in my childhood. I mean, I studied practice books. I studied the game and watching games. I didn't just watch it and kind of tune out. I was watching players. I was watching how they moved on the ice, what they did, why they did it, how they did it, cataloging it and storing it in my mind as to, okay. And then when you're going through all these drills and understanding what purpose are those drills for, what are you learning from these drills? Why do you do them? Angling and passing and all these different things. You know, I was just able to pick up on habits of players. I studied the game. I studied my competition. This is before analytics and all this stuff. You know, paying attention. You know, a lot of times people just don't pay attention. Mm-hmm. They don't listen and they don't pay attention. And they don't watch who are you playing against. What is their favorite move? When they're coming down the right side and they want to cut back in the middle, what do they try to do? They want to come under your stick and then try to score. Well, when they go to do it, move your stick or don't let them do that. And too often people just, I don't know if they get, I don't know, too cocky or arrogant or think they're better than they are, but you have to continue to evolve and get better. Mm-hmm. Every year I came into the year, the new season, it was like, I got to get better. If you're not getting better, you're going backwards because everybody else is getting better.
Right.
You have to continually evolve. And, you know, whether it was skating or whether it was passing or shooting or physical play, my strength, all these different aspects of the game, you don't just work on your strengths, you work on your weaknesses. And yeah, you hone your strengths and continue to make them your strengths, but you also improve your weaknesses so that that bar gets raised even higher. And now you're becoming a more complete player in all facets of the game. And so for me, it was just a matter of adding layers and pieces to my game and building out my game and adding to my strengths and making other parts of my game a strength.
Oh, I love that. I want to kind of take a little bit of a right turn here. You know, I think a lot of folks, you know, when they imagine the life of a professional athlete, right, especially an elite professional athlete, someone that's really doing well in their career, they think of like, man, like you're like a rock star. Like you get to go and, you know, I mean, I'll be honest, like when I watched, you know, the YouTube video that I was talking about, like one of the coolest parts of it was hearing the crowd. Like I was like, man, that was going to work. Right? Like,
yeah.
Like what did that feel like for you?
Well, number one, it's awesome. But number two, it, to your point, it's going to work. It's drowning out that side of it and using the electricity in the building and the energy and the buzz to kind of fuel your game, but not get you too far on that edge or over that edge that you're going lunatic.
Right.
And so for me, again, understanding who you are and understanding how you have to play to be successful, I was not one of these guys that was screwing around in warm up, you know, looking at the fans and waving at it. I was starting to prepare,
yeah,
and get my head ready for what I had to do to win a hockey game. And, you know, other players didn't play the way I played and didn't need to. I wasn't friends with players in the other team. I wasn't friends with a lot of guys in the league because, frankly, I'm trying to hurt them. I'm not trying to injure them. I'm trying to hurt them. And I want to leave a mark on them so that they know, don't come down my side. Don't stand in front of my net. Don't come near me and you'll be safe. But if you come near me, sorry.
Yeah. Buyer beware.
For me, there was no friends on the ice. And there was lots of times we had guys that used to play on our team that would go elsewhere and I would crush the guy or the guy would try to hit me. I remember one time Craig Conroy, who I played with here in St. Louis, got traded and he was in Calgary and he tried to hit me down at the far end. And I looked at him. And then I skated up with the puck. I dumped it in and he cut across and tried to level me. And I looked at him. Okay. Puck went back down in the other end and I murdered him. And he's down on the ice. And I looked at him. I said, that's your warning. Next one you're not going to like. And he went back to the bench. I was talking and I talked to him after the game. Yeah. And he went back to the bench. He's like, I thought he was your friend. And he's like, well, not during a game.
Yeah. Off
the ice. Like, hey, listen, there's lines that are out there. And once you cross that line, then you're fair game. And sorry.
Yeah. Well, hey, you're going to work, right?
Yeah.
It's all business.
Yeah.
You know, and all's fair.
And that's, I think some of the time people don't realize that. Sometimes fans don't realize that. And sometimes the players don't realize that. It's a business. And the business is winning.
Yeah. No,
you're not going to be there very long. Well, you might have a contract and you have to be there as long as that contract, but people around you, you got to realize there's coaches' jobs on the line. There's management jobs on the line. There, you know, ticket staff, all these people are reliant on you winning a hockey game.
Yeah.
You know, the whole staff, really, when you think about it, the purpose of the entity is to win hockey games and sell tickets and make money. And, you know, all it's to make money, but you make money by winning. Who wants to keep going to see a crappy team lose?
Most of the fans are as loyal as your guys' record.
For the most part. I mean, you're going to have the passionate diehards, and then you're going to have a segment of the fan base that, you know, especially depending upon where you play, like Anaheim, when we were good and winning, man, it was packed every night. It was a buzz. We had a fun team. We had a tough team, a goal score. You know, we could play any way you wanted. And once that goes away, people are like, well, I got the beach. I got this. There's other things to do.
Yeah. Listen, I grew up in Anaheim. I was born in Anaheim and I grew up in Orange County and those fucking people aren't loyal. No way. Like they got the Angels, you know, like they never, you know, the Rams left them. The Raiders left them. Those guys, they're as loyal as their options, you know.
You know, and that's what you're dealing with. So you got to really focus and hone in on, okay. And it's hard to get young kids to figure out early on. I was thrown into the fire early in Hartford, you know, a struggling franchise, a struggling team, really good leadership. I had an amazing mentor in Brad McCrimmon, who they had acquired from Detroit to mentor me. and he was awesome. I roomed with him. I was 18. He was 36.
Yeah.
I'm sure the last thing he wanted to do was room with a snot-nosed little 18-year-old.
No.
Looking around going, where am I? And, you know, but I went, you know, to dinner with him every night, you know, and it was just talking about the game, the league, how to be a pro, how to, you know, how to handle yourself. And, you know, of course, as a young kid, you're like, yeah. But it's crazy to think I saw him. We actually played Detroit, where he was then coaching, when I played my 1,000th game. So wow. He saw game number one as my partner.
Yeah.
And roommate. And then he saw game 1,000 as a coach for the other team. And he's like, so what do you think about all that stuff that I told you when you were 18? And now I was 33 or 32, whatever I was when I played my 1,000th game. And he's like, what do you think? Everything that he told me, bang on.
Wow.
And then, but as a young kid, every kid's the same. You got experience on your own. You're going to take little tidbits and you're going to understand and realize what that meant. But you've got to make your own mistakes. You've got to kind of break through the complacency and the issues that may or may not plague you and kind of move on from there. But, you know, it was awesome that he was able to be there because he was such a big part of my early career.
What was the best piece of advice he gave you?
I already had it to a certain degree, but be unpredictable. He's like, listen, kid, fight him, stick him, spear him, slash him, punch him in the face. If you don't, you know, I didn't know what I was going to do half the time anyways, but if it was somebody's coming at you, spear him once. Somebody's coming near you, punch him in the face. Somebody's coming near you, just turn and skate away. If they don't, you know, always keep them thinking. And what's going to happen is you're going to create a little extra space. There's going to be a little shyness there as to how much do I really want to go in there? How much do I really want to go near them? What's going to happen? And that split second decision of that hesitation allows me to get the puck, pass it up, and now we're gone.
Hey gang, Darius Machaza here. I hope you're enjoying the show so far. So listen, I know we have a lot of CEOs, entrepreneurs, and business owners out there that listen to the show. And right now, if you're one of those folks and you're doing, let's call it a bare minimum of 7 figures and above in your business, then what I'd like to do is give you an offer right now. How would you like to get your hands on the frameworks that I actually used to scale my last company, which started off as a small little 7-figure company, to over $100 million in annual revenue? And I did it in less than 2 years, and I did it without costly growing pains, without the headaches that you usually experience when you are scaling your business. So if you're one of those folks and you're trying to grow your company, but you're finding yourself stuck in that day-to-day, if you're one of the listeners and you're getting grinded, this is your respite from getting grinded on in your business, you're listening to our show, and you're dealing with the breakdowns, you're dealing with inefficiencies, and you know, you've got that firefighter suit on and all the problems lining on your desk, and you're not doing the work you're supposed to be doing, which is working on the business instead of in it, then what I'm about to talk to you about for the next, call it 60 seconds, this is precisely for you. Real quickly, though, if you don't already know this about me, prior to starting The Greatness Machine, I spent 20 years of my life as a founder and CEO of real-world companies. And during that time, I actually grew my companies to over $1.2 billion with a B in bootstrap revenue. In fact, we scaled my last company from 30 to 1,000 employees, and we did it in just 36 months. And we did it all by using a 3-step framework that I call my Scale Map Method. So that, of course, brings us to the purpose of this here mid-roll ad. Yes, this is what the podcast producers call these things. Recently, I created a 30-minute training, and what it does is it walks you step-by-step through all of my Scale Map Method frameworks, and you can watch it right now for free when you go to dariusscale.com. That's my first name, Darius, scale, S-C-A-L-E.com. And what these frameworks do is they fix, they simplify, and they streamline every single aspect of your business. And they do it without the need for complicated scaling systems that are typically way too difficult and way too time consuming for a busy CEO like you and for my, like myself was to implement. So if you want a simple and you want a proven path to remove yourself from the day-to-day operations, just like I did, so that you can do what you're supposed to be doing, which is leading your company to record growth without the headaches and without the growing pains, go to DariusScale.com. That's www.DariusScale.com. Watch the short video, and I'll see you guys on the inside. Now, back to the show.
So I'm kind of a novice when it comes to hockey, but did you always play that way when you were young? Like, you're like, oh, like I'm getting on the ice, I'm going to score goals, defend, and I'm going to kick people's asses. Is that like the, in which order did you put that in?
It would depend on how the game was going and what was going on in the game. There would be, you know, you might be an offensive juggernaut and you might be scoring goals or, you know, winning the game. Or there might be somebody out there trying to take liberties with people. And you're like, all right, I'm going to get this guy with his head down, you know, where you're like, all right, you want to run around. Okay. I'm going to get you at some point. I'm getting you.
At what age did you start playing like that? Was it from day one?
Well, hitting didn't start until I was 12, but I still, you know, there was bumping, there was, you know, stick work and all that stuff. But, you know, really until I was probably, you know, 11 or 12.
Can I ask you a question about this, though? Because I really don't know anything about hockey. The rule book does not allow fighting, or I mean, most sports, they don't let you fight. What's the
not in fighting is only, well, fighting is allowed in the NHL. You get a penalty. Fighting is kind of allowed in junior hockey. And that's okay. It. It's not allowed in minor hockey. And it's not allowed in college.
So when you got to junior hockey, the first day of junior hockey, like, oh, we're allowed to fight.
Oh, yeah.
And were you like amped up, ready for this? You're like, oh, it's brawl time.
Well, I had never fought before, you know, because I come from a small town. I played high school hockey and then I go to play junior. And you got to remember, I had a full cage on. Yeah. Everybody played in full cages in junior B. It wasn't until I got to junior A in the Ontario Hockey League where you had the half shield. Otherwise, you're punching a guy in the full face mask,
right,
or you got to wrestle with him to get his helmet off before you then could punch him in the face. or it was a mutual thing. You're like, all right, let's take our helmets off and let's fight.
So, I mean, obviously you had a pretty, you know, historically, and, you know, even as a Hall of Famer, have a reputation as to being kind of a brawler, right? And like a guy that like, does, like that's part of like, that was part of your strategy, it sounds like.
I didn't fight a ton. I fought a little bit. And really, I was playing 30 plus minutes a night. The last thing I needed to do was, you know, when I was playing against the top players, you know, a lot of the fighters are playing on the fourth line. A lot of the, you know, I never played against them. And number two, I'm like, why am I going to fight this guy? He's going to get 3 minutes today.
So it was more about just like less.
Well, a little fighting bit of common sense and a little bit about, all right, like what good is this going to do for me?
Right.
Yeah. If I need to do it to protect a teammate, yes. If I need to do it to protect myself, yes. But outside of that, I'm not going to waste my time or effort fighting this guy if it doesn't serve my team a purpose and it doesn't help our team win a hockey game. At the end of the day, it was about winning. I was just always focused and always kind of game planning for how are we going to win this game.
Going forward, you know, you obviously have some amazing accolades in the league. I mean, some amazing moments. If you were to like say what are your top one or two like biggest moments of your career, and you're in a business that, you know, that there you have those moments when you get to have a career like you had. Like, what would you say are the two biggest moments that you can think of?
Well, the biggest moment was winning the Stanley Cup. It's something that you dream of your whole life. You know, especially growing up when I was growing up playing hockey, the Olympics were not really an option. Pros weren't allowed to play.
Right.
So I didn't grow up thinking, oh my God, I won an Olympic gold medal. I was always grew up, oh, I'm carrying a Stanley Cup around and, you know, hooting and hollering and doing all that. And the year we won in Anaheim, I had played in the finals the year before and lost in game 7 with Edmonton.
Yeah.
So there was that bitter taste in your mouth. You lost a tough game 7. And now you get another chance to play and win the Stanley Cup with a team that we had beat the year before when I was in Edmonton. So you know how good the team is. You know the style they play.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it was an interesting group, but only Scott Niedermayer on the team had won a Stanley Cup. A few of us had been to the finals, but when you have that many players that are that focused and that diligent about the goal was to win a Stanley Cup. That's it. Plain and simple. There was nobody that was kind of floating around going, oh, I'm just happy to be here. I'm just doing, you know, everybody knew this is the goal. You know, we believe we can do it. And now it's up to us to go out and show it. And each and every night we played, it was like, all right, it's to serve a purpose. A, it's to win, but B, it's to serve a purpose to get closer to winning a Stanley Cup.
So, like, talking about that team and what, how many seasons had you been playing at that point in the league?
I had been playing 14.
So you're 14 seasons in, you played on all these teams. Did you notice a difference on that team, like right when you got there, as opposed to the previous teams? Was there anything like that stood out to you as a difference?
I would say the focus, and I would say the hunger from the veterans to the young guys, knowing the type of team they had. They had lost in the conference finals to Edmonton that I was on the year before, and knowing, you know, Brian Burke was the GM. He did a good job of explaining to the players, this team is together now to win. We don't know when this team is, how long it's going to be together, you know, all that kind of stuff. Very open and honest with the players, kind of guiding them and steering them and allowing them the ability to kind of take the reins a little bit and be their own makers. And then Randy Carlisle was the coach, and, you know, he was a no-nonsense, you know, very straightforward. And for our team, it was the perfect setup because we had an older team, a lot of veteran leaders. You know, you had myself, you had Sean O'Donnell, you had Teemu Selänne, Scott Niedermayer, a lot of guys that had been in the league 10-plus years, Todd Marchant, Jaguar, our goalie. So, you know, we had a really good mix of core veterans that were a big part of our team. Mm-hmm. And we had a lot of good, young, up-and-coming, energized, you know, in the dog days of the season when the vets are getting maybe a little tired, though, that's when you look at the young guys to kind of pick up the slack and kind of energize the group and get us going in any given game. So, you know, for us, it was a really good mixture. And I think, again, as I said before, when you have a team that can play multiple styles, mm-hmm. play a tough, hard-nosed physical game, play a 1-0 defensive grind, a 6-5, you know, offensive battle, we could play in any of those games and we could win any of those games. So it was just a matter of us figuring out and us kind of looking at the other team and saying, okay, how are we going to play tonight?
So like what I just heard you say is a combination of like a lot of autonomy. People had the autonomy to like do their best that work and a lot of leadership.
Yep. I mean, within a system that gave you some room. There was structure in place, but there was room to think outside the line, so to speak. Defensively, we were structured. Offensively, it was be creative, do what you do, go score goals, knowing that this is how we play back here.
And so that's obviously an amazing moment. Like coming off that moment, you know, you're 14 seasons into the league. How did you start thinking of your career? Like where, like, at that point, it's like, okay, I've done a lot. You're like, all right, I'm just see how much more I can do. Like, how did you kind of approach it?
Well, at that point, you know, that was pretty much the only thing left. And you're kind of looking at it going, okay, you don't want to be that guy who's 40 years old going, okay, I need to win a cup. And you're bouncing around doing all this stuff. You know, people look at you differently when you've won, which is crazy to a certain degree because it has a lot to do with luck. It has a lot to do with circumstance. You know, teams, whatever. When I look back on that team, there's probably 12, 15 players that had career years.
Yeah. You know,
how many teams can say that? But that's just, you know, the way it worked. You know, everybody was in that specific point in inflection in their careers where they were ready to take that next step, wherever they were on the pendulum for their role was with the team. And everybody knew their role, which was another nice thing. Everybody was okay with their role. Everybody liked their role. And if they didn't like their role, then they traded them and moved them for something else and somebody else who was okay with their role.
Yeah.
So there was less strife in the room, less bitching about ice time, less bitching about this and that. It was more about, I'm excited to be here. I love the team. I love my teammates. I want to go win. I want to do whatever I can to help this team win.
Yeah, I love
everybody
that.
Going in the same direction.
Yeah.
Everybody with the same mindset. Everybody understanding and believing. And that's the other part, believing. Everybody genuinely believed we could win.
Yeah. It's amazing to hear this, that it, because there's so many, this is so analogous to winning in every part of life, right? Yeah. Is really getting people to row in the same direction, have alignment, remove the friction, good leadership, people knowing their role. You're describing any winning organization right now, right? And it's just so cool that you got to express that in a way that created, you know, a pinnacle in one of the toughest sports in the world. So it's just so cool to hear, man. I want to head into the new business, but before we go there, because this is the newest chapter in your life, you know, when you had won the Stanley Cup and you have a few more years left in the NHL, you know, how did that feel when you're like, man, you know, like to be at that part of your career where you're like seeing an end in sight and you're young, you're like, you were in your early mid 30s, right? Knowing that this is time is coming to end. How did that feel for you?
Yeah. When we had won, I'm thinking back now, I think I was 32. So, you know, at that point, I thought I had a long runway still. You know, guys were playing. I wanted to try to play till I was 40.
Right.
You know, there was still a longer runway for me anyways that I thought.
Right.
And so I was like, all right, now we know what it takes. Let's go get the second one. You know, let's get on this. There was a few hiccups that next year with some players and some other stuff that kind of derailed us, and it was created a little bit of dysfunction within our team, and we struggled that next year for a number of reasons. But and then I was traded after the following season to Philly, and you know what, it just, things happen for a reason. You know, I'm a firm believer that everything happens throughout, you make decisions, everything happens for a reason. And when people go back and constantly look at, wow, what if I would have made this choice and what if I would have done that, it serves zero purpose.
Yeah.
Because if you go back and change that, everything else could be changed. And all the success, all the wins, all of that stuff can be changed just like that. And so, you know, we talk about throughout my career, there was always decisions. Should I leave home at 15? Should I play NCAA hockey versus junior? Should I turn pro? Should I ask for a trade? Should I sign a new contract? Should I, you know, there's all these decisions that have to be made and all these things that go on throughout the course of your life and your career. And you go back and go, well, if I change the one decision to play NCAA, I then have to change the decision to go back and not play junior A and play junior B again. And how does that affect my development? And how does that affect all these, my maturation process and my development personally?
Right.
You know, so there's a lot of relevant and irrelevant things that can happen that you really struggle with. And people always go, people that are either at a crossroads in their life or they're, you know, having a midlife crisis or whatever, they always want to go back and make a different decision. And you're like, you got to look that way. There's nothing back there for you. The only thing back there are life lessons and learning lessons.
Yeah.
Everything else is that way.
Yeah, so I there's like an analogy. It's like there's a reason why the front windshield's big and the rear view mirror is small, right?
That's exactly it.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I love that. So sounds to me like you trusted yourself and kind of rolled with the punches, no pun intended, but to really like hit that pinnacle in an illustrious career and then ended up in Philly, had a couple great years there. And then, you know, how did it feel when you finally said, like, what, like, I'm done? Like, what did that feel like for you? Because this
well,
is a
big, I got injured. Big deal. I got a stick in the eye. I had a bad concussion, eye injury. And, you know, that was kind of the end of it. It took me a couple years, A, to get healthy, but B, to kind of accept, all right, I'm done. And to stop watching the game as a player and watching the game, picking it apart and dissecting it in that way. And then kind of looking at it more from a scout's eye or from a manager's eye and looking at it going, okay, how are we playing? How can we fix it? What types of players can you add? And so, you know, I was at that point there where I had two passions growing up. One was to play the game of hockey and play in the NHL.
Right.
The second one was to either be a manager or president of a hockey team or own my own business. And at that point, I decided to work on trying to be a president GM of a team. And, you know, spent 6-7 years kind of plying my trade and kind of learning and understanding the business side of the game and, you know, really kind of digging in deep on the financials, the different nuances that you have to look at as a manager and, you know, short term, long term, how that all plays out. And at the time the game was changing, obviously analytics had come in and changed a lot, plus the salary cap, plus the finances and how you move money around to pay players and things like that. So it was, you know, a lot of it can be simplified, but a lot of it, you just need to kind of dig in and learn more about it. And kind of just like I did as a player, add to your strengths. Well, that add to your strengths and learn, continue to evolve and right. continue to add things to your repertoire and begin to learn about the new side of the business, this non-hockey side, because really it's all about business. And yeah, you're picking players and doing all things like that, but a lot of it is really, you know, the business side of it.
What's up, TGMers? JustWorks supports small businesses with simple, seamless solutions like integrated payroll. Now, for a limited time only, try out their payroll plan for 1 month for free. As a reliable and flexible platform, JustWorks earns back time so you can focus on running your small business with big confidence. Running a business is demanding. And look, we've all been there. You know, you're juggling countless tasks and responsibilities every single day. That's why when it comes to managing payroll, you need a solution that streamlines the process so you can focus on what really matters, growing your business. Experience the relief of streamlined payroll management with their comprehensive solution. From automated payments to accurate tax calculations and seamless withholdings, JustWorks got you covered. Plus, their expert support ensures you have the assistance every single step of the way. And here's the best part. There's no hidden fees. Designed to be flexible, JustWorks can support teams of one to as many as your small business hires, including contractors. In just 30 minutes, set up a payroll that streamlines paying your team, saves time, mitigates errors, and is a desktop and mobile friendly. You can even integrate time tracking and benefits that support running your small business with big confidence. Don't miss your chance to get 1 month free by visiting justworks.com/greatness. Secure the limited time offer and start letting JustWorks run your payroll so you don't have to. Start your free month now at justworks.com/greatness.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
So you spent a few years on the business side of it. Are you? I know you still do some stuff in media and in the league. Is that still something that you're going to try to pursue, or you're like, no, I'm all in on my business now?
No. We're, you know, I'm 100% in on the business. You know, it's a passion of ours. It's something that we feel we provide a certain niche and have a path for people to continue to get better from a physical perspective, but more so from a mental perspective and really whether it's decompressing, whether it's taking a, you know, 48-hour break, whatever it is, as an athlete and now as a business owner and person, understanding the mental side of it and how quickly things can shift and get out of whack, you have to be more cognizant to the mind, body, spirit. And really, for me, when I got hurt in Philly, I spent part of those 2 years traveling and trying to get healthy, both physically, but more mentally and kind of getting past, all right, I was already transitioning, you know, probably halfway through my career, I was already transitioning out of there's Chris, the hockey player, mm-hmm. to there's Chris Pronger. I was not a fan of, oh, he's a hockey player.
Yeah.
More than a hockey player.
Yeah, of course.
You know, and so a lot of times athletes either buy into that or they can say, no, that's not accurate. And early on, yeah, you're going to get the fame and the notoriety because you're Joe Blow basketball player or you're Joe Blow baseball player or what have you. But at some point, you're no longer that person.
Right.
You're no longer in the limelight. You're no longer the guy on the pedestal. You're some old retired guy.
Yeah.
And a lot of people, that's where they struggle, when they allow themselves to be this person as a hockey player and not a person. They struggle with the lack of notoriety. They struggle with people not treating them like, oh, there's so-and-so. Well, people, you know, like there's lots of kids here that never saw me play. They don't know my name. They don't even know who I am.
Yeah.
And their parents do.
Right. Well, it's funny. I think you're speaking to having your identity tied to your business or your career, right? And in your 20s and 30s, your business was the business of being one of the, you know, best defensive men in hockey. And that was your, and but what you're saying is I didn't tie my identity to that necessarily. Like that was my job and that's what I did. And then I moved on and I'm still me, but my worth is not tied to the fact that I'm playing the game and getting, you know, cheers from the audience or, you know, people asking for the autograph. It's just tied to that. That was, you were respecting the job you were doing.
Surrounding yourself with people that, you know, again, I didn't like having name droppers and back patters and, you know, the entourage of people around you. You got to surround yourself with mentors and good people that are going to help guide you in those tough, difficult times in your life. When I got hurt in Philly, I called two people and both of them the next day flew to Philly and sat down and talked and walked me through kind of their experiences with retirement. Walked me through, you know, the next steps, the next phases. You know, probably the best advice I was given was don't do anything your first year.
Yeah.
You know, you're going to be healing. You're going to be doing all this. You're done. People are going to be throwing charities at you and all these different deals and all this. Don't do anything because you're going to want to rush into doing something because you're bored and you want to just do something. And it's not going to be a passion project. It's not going to be something that's of real value and tangible to what you want your next phase to be. And, you know, it's amazing to look back and go, okay, think about all the different things that were put in front of me and presented to me. And I don't know if any of those are around today.
Yeah.
Outside of some of the, you know, charitable endeavors and things like that, outside of that stuff, which everybody has their own charities that are near and dear to them and things like that. And, you know, but you have to pick what you're passionate about so that you're invested in it and you want to help and you want to do good.
Yeah. I love that. There's a book I'm reading right now called Ikigai. And that's where like your passions, your talents, and what people will pay you for all come together. Yeah. It's pretty cool. It's by Hector. I'll send you the book.
Yeah, please do.
It's really cool. Yeah. It's a very short read too, but you're talking about Ikigai, man. So let's talk about Well-Inspired Travels. We got about five more minutes and we got to bounce. But so you started Well-Inspired Travels with your wife. I want to hear all about it.
Yeah, my wife started it. It was been a passion project for her since she was a kid. Her dad was diagnosed with stage 4 colon cancer and given a 10% chance to live. And with that, he looked at his wife and kids and said he wanted to travel the world. Went over to Europe that first summer and she got to see him off chemo and full of passion and joy and happiness. And she was like, oh man, travel's amazing. You know, to see him in that light and the way he was, they had a great trip, came back. He was back on chemo radiation, getting pounded and was a shell of himself. And he all the while was planning the next trip to Asia. And she's a firm believer that he chose Asia because he wanted to marry Eastern medicine and Western medicine, acupuncture, holistic healing methods, transcendental meditation. And then, you know, 40 plus years ago, he's really at the forefront of kind of where we are now with how we merge the two together. You know, when you go to a doctor now, it's chiropractor, it's acupuncture. It's all these things are now, you know, a pretty big part of our medicine now for a lot of us. And so they go over to Asia. He immerses himself in the jungle for 2 to 3 weeks at a time with a medicine man. And they go off and see all the sights and sounds of Asia. And really he's just fighting for his life. And comes back home 2 months later, gets a call from a doctor. I've got this new radical new surgery. It's going to save your life. Gets the surgery. 2 years later, he's given a clean bill of health and cancer-free. Wow. And never had cancer again.
Wow.
Well, from a 6-7-year-old eyes, she sees, you know, really what travel has done for the mind, body, spirit, and the healing powers of travel and what they use travel for in their lives and with their family. It really left a mark on her. So they continue to travel and, you know, every summer and you know, got to see the world and you know, all the different cultures and culinary styles and things like that. And so when we got together, she was always asked, I was at the peak of my career. She was always asking me, like, why don't we travel more? And I'm like, well, I spend 2 or 3 months training, preparing for a season, spending all this money on food and trainers and all this stuff. I'm going to go away for a week and eat a bunch of crap and not work out. And it's all gone.
So
she started sourcing properties and talking to chefs and restaurants and trying to figure out how we could make it work and, you know, finding gyms and things like that. The hospitality industry 20 plus years ago was pretty still in its infancy as it relates to fitness and spas and things of that nature. So finding those and then just through word of mouth, you know, teammates ask or wives, girlfriends, business associates would ask, hey, where'd you guys go? How'd you find it? I just like Lauren tracked it down and, you know, just that bond, that trust factor, you know, she started helping people out. And then when we got to Philly, Instagram was, you know, social media was kind of in its beginning of its heyday. And, you know, she had a little private account and, you know, again, she'd post pictures of our travels on there and things like that. And people would just ask and she started helping people with that. And again, because it's, you know, that trust factor and bond of being in the same shoes and understanding what they're going through and dealing with, you know, she started doing like 20 or 30 of these. And then, you know, the light bulb moment comes off. There's something here. But at the same time, you got 3 young kids at home. I get hurt. Her mother gets breast cancer and her dad has a debilitating stroke and is paralyzed at his right side. So from a timing perspective, it certainly wasn't right. And so, you know, probably 4.5 years ago, our oldest starts driving. You know, I feel much better. Her mom's better. Unfortunately, her dad passed away. But she's able to devote more time to building out the business and putting those proper structures in place to really make a go of it and make it a real business. And at the time, I was working for the Florida Panthers, and I was helping her on the business plan, helping her network and kind of build out that side of things. And really, I started to enjoy myself. And at one juncture, I was not enjoying myself on the hockey side. And then on this side, I'm like the second part of kind of my, I guess, my wish list when I was a kid of what I wanted to do and what I was passionate about, owning and operating a business. You know, it kind of, it's funny, you know, the timing and how things present themselves. And it just was a great fit. You know, I love seeing people have a great time, love seeing people happy. And, you know, from a hospitality perspective, that's what people do. They make people happy. So,
yeah,
you know, from that perspective, it was a great fit. And when you're around people like that are always happy, you know, it brightens up your day. It's fun going to work every day. It's fun working on trips and as my wife likes to call it, travel matchmaking.
Yeah.
And finding places that are a great fit for people and seeing them come back and have life altering moments. And, you know, whether it's a CEO going away on a staycation and learning a new, you know, sleep technique or a new yoga pose or whatever it is, to somebody going away on a 2 or 3 week vacation with their family and seeing some amazing destinations and cultures and really kind of bringing their family together and having lifelong memories and memories that are going to bridge gaps. And I think from our perspective, really understanding our clientele and that little niche that you talked about earlier, you know, we have a unique ability to understand what they're going through from the demands in their time, the pressures of the job, the fame, the fortune, the stress on home life, pressure on kids. That's where sports and business really come together. It's very similar, especially from a, you know, a CEO, C-level executive type. It's very demanding and stressful. And,
yeah.
You know, for us, it's really about trying to help those people manage their travel experiences and use travel as a way to really help them, whether it's bring their family together, decompress, you know, from a mental health and wellness perspective to, you know, really just learning more about the world and how vast it is and kind of asking deeper questions to really get to know our clientele on a much more personal level so that you're able to provide them with a much higher level of service and a much better travel experience because you know what's going on in their lives. You know, I tell people all the time, anything you tell me, I guarantee I've been through at least once, if not more. And you're able to kind of really connect with them on that level. So you're able to kind of walk them through what you went through, how travel helped you, different things in that regard, and then kind of piece together what makes sense for their families, what makes sense for them personally, if it's a, you know, a business leader, whether it's an athlete needing to kind of decompress or, you know, flush your system or what have you. There's all kinds of different scenarios that are always present out there that, you know, we need to just talk to people. And really it's just about, you know, as I went on in my hockey career, it was more about listening and hearing people and understanding what they're saying than it was about the rah-rah speeches, and really get a better feel for what's going on. And if there is an issue, what's the root cause?
Yeah.
Not what can I do to cover it up? Well, get to the root, get to the issue at hand. You know, whether is somebody having marital problems? Is somebody having problems with their kids? Is somebody super stressed out at work? Is somebody, you know, what is the root cause and what is causing the issue? And then how can we help alleviate the situation? How can we help manage the situation in a way that's going to help you become the industry of Titan and be a better leader and be a better athlete,
yeah,
father, mother, sister, brother, whatever it is, and really kind of peel back that onion layer to really get to know you on a personal level, to be able to help you get the most value and the most bang in your travel experiences.
I love that, man. I want to go, we probably do a whole show on this, but unfortunately, we're out of time. So you guys are offering this amazing, you know, concierge level boutique luxury travel services. People can find you guys at wellinspiredtravels.com. Is that the best place to connect?
Best place. We're on Instagram. We're on the World Wide Web.
So I will tell you this, man, this has been so much fun. I loved hanging out with you, Chris. You are the man.
And thank you, sir. I appreciate it. You're the man too.
My brother, I really appreciate you. You guys, go check out. We'll put this in the show notes. Well Inspired Travels. If people want to connect with you, Chris, is just on social media, just like
all the I'm on LinkedIn. I'm on Instagram. I'm on the website. Yeah, there's a little thing to, you can type in a form, comes to us.
Okay.
Here at the office. So
awesome, man. What an inspiring hour. I love getting to spend time with you, even just hanging out and bullshitting and having fun. And this is just to learn about your life. It's such an amazing, illustrious career, and just like all the cool things you've done. And man, you've done it with such just like humility and down to earth. And brother, I appreciate you so much. Thank gratitude. You.
Appreciate it, Darius.
Yeah. Well, hey guys, you heard it here. Like, learn from the pronger. The man. And go check out Well Inspired Travels. I know we got a lot of CEOs and some people that really want to take their travel to the next level. Please go check out the wellinspiredtravels.com, where he and his wife are really building an amazing business. And with that said, we'll see you guys next time. Peace out. We out of here. Love you.
You are listening to The Greatness Machine, and that's a wrap for today. Listen, if you love what you heard, subscribe to the show on whatever podcast platform that you're tuning in on so that you don't miss any of our future episodes. We have tons of great people coming on, and we're stoked to have you here to enjoy it with us. Leave us a review. Tell us what you love most about this particular episode. We love getting the reviews. We love to see what you guys love most. And if this particular episode, you know, made you think of someone who's leveling up in their business and in their life, print screen, share it with them. Leaders are the best givers. And after all, we're all here to support and grow with each other. And in case you want to see some of the fun behind the scenes shots or some of the things that we're doing, I'm actually writing about this in my weekly newsletter. Go to www.therealdarius.com and subscribe to my newsletter. We're talking about fun things like business and life and mindfulness and cryptocurrencies and gosh, I don't even know, everything and anything, but it's tons of fun stuff I write about. I try to get it out on a weekly basis. You can subscribe at www.therealdarius.com. And with that said, look, thank you guys so much. Appreciate you. I love you. Peace. We're out of here. See you guys on the next one.
Hey there. What's up, everybody? Darius here, and I'm here to tell you about my main man, Robert Glazer, and his amazing show, The Elevate Podcast. Robert is a buddy of mine, and his Elevate Podcast is second to none. So The Elevate Podcast, what is it? It's a conversational show where Robert sits down with world-class CEOs, New York Times best-selling authors, and the best thought leaders and performers in their fields. You're going to hear stories about triumph, failure, resilience, more importantly, all the learnings along the way. So some of his guests include James Clear from Atomic Habits, Angela Duckworth from Grit, Susan Cain, author of Quiet, Morning Brew founder and CEO Alex Lieberman, and hundreds more. Every episode shares valuable insights in how to expand your capabilities as a leader and align your life and work to your most important principles. Robert's goal is that you're going to leave each episode inspired and with plenty of next steps that you can put into practice into your life. And look, if you're looking to elevate your life, your leadership, and your business, Elevate is the show for you. It's like I always say, we as podcast listeners, we listen to 6 shows, not just mine, but Bob should be one of yours. Subscribe to the Elevate Podcast today on Apple Podcasts or your favorite podcast platform. Check it out.
This episode is brought to you by the Yap Media Podcast Network. I'm Hala Taha, CEO of the award-winning digital media empire, Yap Media, and host of Yap, Young and Profiting Podcast, a number one entrepreneurship and self-improvement podcast where you can listen, learn, and profit. On Young and Profiting Podcast, I interview the brightest minds in the world, and I turn their wisdom into actionable advice that you can use in your daily life. Each week, we dive into a new topic like the art of side hustles, how to level up your influence and persuasion, and goal setting. I interview A-list guests on Young and Profiting. I've got the best guests, like the world's number one negotiation expert, Chris Voss, Shark Damon John, serial entrepreneurs Alex and Layla Hormozi, and even movie stars like Matthew McConaughey. There's absolutely no fluff on my podcast, and that's on purpose. Every episode is jam-packed with advice that's going to push your life forward. I do my research, I get straight to the point, and I take things really seriously, which is why I'm known as the Podcast Princess and how I became one of the top podcasters in the world in less than 5 years. Young and Profiting Podcast is for all ages. Don't let the name fool you. It's an advanced show. As long as you want to learn and level up, you will be forever young. So join podcast royalty and subscribe to Young and Profiting Podcast, or Yap, like it's often called by my Yap fam, on Apple, Spotify, CastBox, or wherever you listen to your podcasts.